The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. It's the bonus show as we go back into Crazy Town.
I did hear, though, that Amy Schumer and hundreds upon hundreds were arrested. Hey, just for the fun of it.
Okay.
Just for the fun of it.
Right.
Anybody agree with this idea that I have here? Just for the fun of it. For Amy Schumer and the hundreds that were arrested, mm-hmm. just for the fun of it. And,
right.
And maybe to teach them a little lesson.
Mm-hmm.
Let's deny them the presumption of innocence and due process.
Yes,
I agree. Who's with us on this?
And I think they should raise the sentences for protesters. Trespassers or whatever the charge was. I don't know.
Hey, why not? Because that's what it comes down to. And
well, another one would be impersonating a comedian.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. That's a serious charge.
It really is. So here we are.
Mm-hmm.
The cloture vote scheduled for 10:30 tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
After that, 30 hours. There's only a possibility of 30 hours of debate. And after that, which would be late Saturday evening at some time,
mm-hmm.
is when McConnell could call for a vote. It could be earlier if the Democrats, you know, want to give up the floor. Now, there is the thing that if they know they have the votes, they want to go home.
Yeah, so if they do it at 10:30 on Friday, if the cloture vote is 10:30 on Friday,
right,
then 30 hours would be 4:30 on Saturday afternoon, and that's when they could. And as you mentioned, it's up. Actually, the rule is up to 30 hours, so if they right, the ma- if they don't go 30
if
hours.
They don't go to maximum,
you know,
30
they
hours.
Could, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so the thing is, they want to go home. So if they know
right.
they have the votes, we've seen this before with Congress. Well, okay, we're going to fight to the death. Well, we want to go home.
Well, and keep in mind, inevitably, they know they're not going to be able to block the process. The votes are going to fall the way they're going to fall.
Right.
So just get to the vote, because the Kamala Harris's of the world and Elizabeth Warren and all of them are going to want to get back in front of the camera as soon as possible.
Right. Now the reason they say later on Saturday evening is because they're going to start it at 10:30.
Yeah.
So you may not get to the cloture vote until 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Friday
right.
or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Yep. You start the process starts. And so
right.
it could be, you know, later on Saturday night or very early into Sunday morning. We heard the senator was from South Dakota, has his daughter's wedding. And, on Saturday, where he said he can't, you know, be there. But that story sort of died last night a little bit. I don't know if there's an update on that. I'll have to look for that. But on this actual topic, it's a topic that we've been discussing for 2 weeks. And it's one of those topics that happens more frequently now.
Mm-hmm.
Where in the debate of actual critical thinking, the Democrats have no argument. Mm-hmm. They're making arguments.
Yeah.
But they're so easy to blow a hole in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it comes down to what it is supposed to come down to in America. Is there evidence? Look, we all know that the Democrats, we all know all that, you know, that, you know, believe the, you know, to believe the accuser.
Yeah, right.
All that is a line of, we all know that's a line of BS from the left.
Mm-hmm.
No, you believe the liberal accuser. You don't
right.
believe the Republican accuser. If it's mm-hmm. a Republican woman accusing it, you don't believe it. It's only in the cases that are important to them where you believe the accuser. We all know it.
Right. Well, otherwise, you consider Bill Clinton a criminal a number of times over, right?
Now, can I ask another question? You know, we just mentioned Amy Schumer because, people know who she is. But the Alyssa Milano thing, why does anybody give her any credibility?
I don't know.
Maybe we've mentioned her just once or twice passing, joking. But why does anybody give her any type of credibility whatsoever? If you're talking about the left, I say you should give somebody credibility by the substance of their argument. Well, if that's the case, you'd never hear from anybody on the left. So I forget about what I just said there.
Well, I don't know why she's relevant. Is she in a current show? I don't know. I actually don't know. I don't know why she's relevant otherwise.
I saw Who's the Boss? It runs all the time. Yeah. I'm just kidding.
And she was in the one with the witches?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so, she was a witch.
Right, yeah. Yeah. So, I don't know. I have no idea if she's in a TV show right now or not. But I don't know why.
I think she was in something last year.
She's relevant to the situation because she claims, that she was sexually assaulted. So,
I didn't know that. She's part of the hashtag Me Too thing.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I didn't know that she said she was sexually assaulted. Mm-hmm. That's what I didn't know. Okay. Mm-hmm. That would be a connection that you could use then to gain, relevance in this topic because mm-hmm. that's what it's about.
Right.
Okay.
But but pop culture wise, I don't know if she still is or not. I actually don't know.
Well, as I've said, because we hear people coming forward. Saying, oh, look, I was sexually assaulted too, mm-hmm. and I stand with her. Well, as we said before, whether you were sexually assaulted or not still does not give you any more credibility when a charge is filed. Or, when a charge is filed against someone. I don't mean legally, but in this case, in his nomination to the Supreme Court, The allegation itself has to be backed up by evidence. Your case, for no matter how heinous and evil it might have been if you were sexually assaulted, has nothing to do with this case.
Right.
Absolutely nothing. Because you were sexually assaulted does not give you a better insight as to whether Kavanaugh is guilty or not.
Right.
None. Zero.
Right.
And that is portrayed, it's one of the one falsehoods that's portrayed. Because you were sexually assaulted, then what you think about Kavanaugh carries more weight. No, it doesn't. That's ridiculous.
Right.
It's a ridiculous statement to make or to be promoting, and it's promoted constantly in this. The only thing that matters is the evidence in every single case. And you and I have talked about this. How long have we talked about this? When, whether it was Trayvon Martin, where mm-hmm. people were taking mm-hmm. sides left and right, and we just said, look, here's the problem. Mm-hmm. You've got that, the 2 or 3 or 4 minute span there mm-hmm. where he was running away, and then next thing he was on top of Zimmerman. That's mm-hmm. the only thing that people saw at that point. And because of that huge blank space in there that no witnesses are there, nobody can say what happened. So
they went by the physical evidence, which was the injuries to Zimmerman's head. But
exactly,
we've said, and even a jury member said, it's possible that he got away with murder. It's just that with the evidence, we couldn't prove because he claims that he felt his life was in imminent danger.
And we rejected at that point mm-hmm. the people. Who would call this show and with certainty say they knew the guilt or innocence.
Right.
And we had people bringing up, but Trayvon Martin wasn't an angel. Doesn't matter whether he was or was not an angel.
Right.
At any other time of his life. It doesn't matter what Zimmerman had said at any time in his life.
Right.
All that mattered
unless he said, I'm going to, kill that.
Right.
Trayvon Martin,
right,
which, then that would have been, obviously, right, that would have been
which, of course, he didn't say.
Right.
But people were definitive in their belief of guilt or innocence mm-hmm. based on a lack of evidence and what they think possibly happened. We have rejected that. We will always reject that. As Americans, as far as I'm concerned, you're obligated to reject that type of
yes,
mindset.
Absolutely.
You go by the evidence. The evidence is what dictates everything.
The emotion is what carries the cause in such protests. And certainly for the families who suffer the loss of a loved one, whether it's Trayvon Martin's family or Michael Brown's family, you can feel for their loss, but also know this is possible, but many people find it impossible to feel for the loss of the family, but also believe and see by the evidence, see what the evidence shows, that the evidence points to that person also being responsible. Now, it didn't necessarily in the Trayvon Martin case, you had, you know, what the physical evidence was Zimmerman, and that's what the jury found. And we don't have everything the jury saw.
No, no. Yeah.
But in the Michael Brown situation, with Officer Wilson on the scene, you know, the family was the first to commission an autopsy. And that autopsy is the one that showed the hands up, don't shoot
never
narrative
happened.
Was a lie.
It's still being used today.
Yes.
As a rallying cry.
Yes.
It never happened. That is unacceptable in America.
Right.
You know, we talk about the Democrats always talking about the fascist on the right. Well, if you listen to what we believe and what we believe about the presumption of innocence, whether it's a criminal trial, a civil trial, or just public opinion in general, or a political trial, still it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. You judge these cases. You judge cases and you judge the guilt or innocence based on the evidence that exists, not just an allegation alone. And the thing is, I'm saying this with passion, but I really don't have to, because every single Democrat listening right now, every single liberal and Democrat protesting yesterday, they all know it. But they are willing to throw it overboard. You know how they know it? Because they're the first ones. Many of those who are in, you know, who were arrested yesterday would demand due process under, you know, due process under the law. But the fact is, they know it, but they will reject it when it comes to their personal politics. Fascism leads. The mindset of fascism leads in them when it's what they want. When it comes to how they're going to be treated, no, we must follow the Constitution completely. But treating somebody else, the Constitution be damned. The spirit of the Constitution be damned. The mindset of the presumption of innocence and that evidence is the only thing that leads and should lead is thrown out the window. Because we want what we want.
You
and
know,
that's what it comes down to.
I was following a case here in Texas where a man had been wrongly found guilty of murder and spent 19 years in prison and got out in 2016. He wanted to be fully exonerated and was working to that end. And finally, it happened. He was fully exonerated. So that's a total of 21 years where he was either behind bars or having his, you know, his name essentially associated with a murder that happened that he was not responsible for. So I was doing some research just to try and refresh my memory on other cases. And there was a man who was accused of rape and spent decades behind bars. It was rape and assault and something else. Aggravated assault and rape, and a third charge that I can't remember, but he was behind bars for 31 years. Before he was proven that he was not the person responsible. Now, mistakes happen in the justice system. We have the DNA technology now that can prove that it wasn't their DNA at the scene or whatever it is. But you think about the label that goes with being falsely accused. And there's a great burden that comes with that for a reason. Now, sometimes it's that the work done in the investigation wasn't right. Sometimes it's an overzealous prosecutor in the legal setting looking to get a political win. But
sometimes witnesses get it wrong.
Well, and in one case, in the murder case, it was a couple of jailhouse witnesses that helped to seal the deal. And you look at that and you think to yourself, we often jump to that conclusion, even in a legal setting, politics can come in if you've got an overzealous prosecutor that insists on getting their way, getting the win.
Duke lacrosse team.
Yeah, exactly. You know, well, it must have happened because the media was reporting it, right?
Yep.
Well, nope. It wasn't. And we forget those moments. I don't know what happened to Dr. Ford. I don't know what didn't happen. But we look again at the situation in terms of the evidence and what backs up her story.
Nothing.
Zero.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. We go to Lisa in Kansas City. Lisa, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Thank you. I was watching the Christian Network this afternoon, and one of their correspondents was talking about Ms. Ford wanting the FBI to have her therapy notes from 2012. And
No, she didn't. She didn't. I mean, that's false. She did not want. In fact, she was holding back the notes from the therapist from the FBI.
No. She was holding them back from the Senate, not from the FBI.
Oh, from the Senate, yes. It's the same thing. There's no difference.
No, there's a big difference.
No, there isn't.
The Senate is partisan. The FBI is a separate branch. What are you talking about?
Well, no, you can give it to the Democrats then. You give it to the Democrats, and then they present it, and the people get to see it. The FBI, what you forget about is the FBI is not investigating anything.
It's not a criminal matter.
It wasn't a criminal matter. It was a background check.
In fact, what the FBI would do with it would be put it into the 302.
Right, which then the Democrats and the Republicans would both have.
That's how that works.
Right.
That's the only role of the FBI in this entire equation. Right. Is to give the Senate the information. Right.
You're making it sound like the FBI would then do an investigation on it. No, it would end up in the partisan body anyway.
That's, in fact, the only purpose the FBI serves in this scenario.
Yes.
Is to deliver that information to the White House and the Senate.
Yep.
I mean, she would officially be putting it into the 302 had she done that during the process and the FBI agreed to take it.
Well,
by the way, They tried to put it in the process with Chairman Grassley twice has called for it.
And if Feinstein would have gone right to the FBI at that point, they could have done it that way.
Right.
She could have given it to them.
Absolutely.
They didn't go that way.
Nope.
So it's a useless conversation.
And if that's accurate, the report that they tried to do that, and assuming Ford's lawyers are telling the truth, again, they're trying to circumvent the system so the information will get out but won't be in the 302. Because of the background check, the supplemental is over. For Cobra Electronics, here's your forecast.
The desert southwest, back under dry conditions after what was Hurricane Rosa, has moved northward. We'll see stretches of I-10 mainly clear today with the exception of far western Texas. There is a moderate risk of excessive rainfall, however, from eastern Iowa into far northwestern Illinois and southwestern Wisconsin, with a larger risk area extending back into the central plains. So you can look to use the wipers for a good portion of the day today on sections of I-80 in Illinois and Iowa, and from I-35 eastward over to I-75 in the upper Great Lakes region and central Midwest area. We're going to see snow north of a line from mainly I-90 in North Dakota. I-94 certainly under the threat of some snow showers. Check ahead for local conditions on I-94. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Savona Show.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. I think one of the last callers was referring to the letter. Chuck Grassley sent a letter to the lawyers of Dr. Ford. It said, I'm writing in response to your letter dated October 2nd. You said Dr. Ford, this is yesterday sent, you said Dr. Ford is willing to turn over her documents to the FBI, but my request of you was not for the documents to be turned over to the FBI. I asked you to provide the documents to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Your response on behalf of the client is a non sequitur. The Constitution charges the Senate with advising the president and his nomination. Senators have a constitutional obligation to investigate and evaluate independently the president's nominees. Our obligation is unrelated to anything the FBI does. That's why we just don't vote on nominees after the president loans us the FBI background investigation. We have to make our own assessment. The U.S. Senate does not control the FBI. If you have an objection of how the FBI conducts its investigations, take it up with Director Wray. But don't raise that objection as a reason not to respond to this committee's demand for relevant evidence. The FBI's investigative decisions aren't our concern. Even if the FBI never interviews Dr. Ford or interviews her 10 times, this committee has a constitutional obligation to investigate Dr. Ford's allegations. And that's what we've been doing since we became aware of her allegations. It's not even clear to me what purpose turning over those materials to the FBI would accomplish. The FBI would simply turn that evidence over to us.
Yes.
As we just said. That's why we stopped.
That's the only purpose the FBI serves.
That's why we stopped. That's why we stopped the last caller. She said, they're political. Isn't an investigation.
It's all political. The FBI only facilitates the interviews. They conduct the interviews because they have the resources and the training. It's that simple.
Right. And so it doesn't make, again, this is where her lawyers are bringing up something that isn't even relevant to the investigation to begin with, because for the millionth time, there is no FBI investigation. The only investigation that's been going on is a Senate Judiciary investigation.
Well, because and this shows you how the lawyers for Dr. Ford are either completely clueless or they didn't want those notes to come out. Because had they been given to the FBI, again, assume the FBI decided to respond to them and take those notes, those therapist notes, they would have been part of the report. They wouldn't have seen the light of day beyond the eyes of 100 people.
It's not even, and by the way, I'm reading this from my phone because I just happened to go on Twitter and see that Molly Hemingway was on it.
Yeah.
It's not even clear what purpose turning those materials over to the FBI would accomplish. The FBI would simply turn that evidence over to the Senate. Mm-hmm. That is precisely the outcome that I seek with this request, is to get the information.
Right.
You have claimed repeatedly that the evidence I've requested supports Dr. Ford's allegations against Judge Kavanaugh. She even provided some of the evidence to, give me a second here as I have to go, to national media. Indeed, if the evidence supported your client's allegation, you surely would produce it as quickly as you could. But you have repeatedly refused to produce this evidence to the Senate. In doing so, you are preventing the Senate from considering the evidence most crucial to Dr. Ford's allegation. I don't know what other inference we should draw from your refusal, but that the withheld evidence does not support Dr. Ford's allegation in quite the way you have claimed. Ooh, that's a challenge, is it not?
Right.
I urge you once again, now for the third time in writing, to turn over the therapy notes, polygraph materials, and communications with the Washington Post that Dr. Ford has relied upon as evidence, in addition to the evidence I requested in my October 2nd letter in light of recently uncovered information. This is interesting here because that was the key of, look at the last sentence. With recently uncovered information, please turn over records and descriptions of direct or indirect contact with senators or their staffs, particularly the offices of Senators Feinstein and Hirono, other than your communications with me and my staff member, my staff in preparation for the September 27th hearing. The alleged witnesses identified by Dr. Ford, Leland Kaiser, Mark Judge, and Patrick Smith and Debbie Ramirez, Julie Swetnick, or their representatives. Sincerely, Chuck Grassley. That letter sent yesterday. So, like I said, the last caller brought it, she was willing to turn them over to the FBI. And our point was, and when I said no, it's like, because our point is they go directly to the Senate to begin with.
Yes.
There is no investigation. They wouldn't be, they'd simply take it and give it to the Senate Judiciary Committee.
And if it ended up in the report, we wouldn't see it. The senators would see it.
Only the senators would see it. And if her goal is, if she has this slam dunk evidence.
Mm-hmm. And she wants the people to see it.
And she wants the people to see it, so then the people can decide.
Give it to Grassley directly, outside of the 302. Because then the other members of the committee, including Dianne Feinstein, would get it and immediately leak it.
Exactly. Or
just blatantly leak it.
Or just release the entire report to the Washington Post and let them print it completely.
Sure. Because they're not political.
Okay. Release it to the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal.
No, I mean, from the left's point of view, and that was the point, well, no, the senators are political. The FBI is not. Well, neither is the Washington Post, according to the liberals.
When was that sent here? I'm trying to see where. Okay, because that letter must have been late last night, because Shannon Bream posted it at 10:47 p.m., and then I'd seen the Molly Hemingway, the last paragraph sure is interesting, about please let us know, please give to us, what you have shared with Feinstein and Hirono. Whoa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because of uncovered evidence. So what do they have?
Right.
What is that one about? So, again, we're getting into stupid area again. We're getting into areas, with the lawyers stating they're going to do something that doesn't even make any sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
A demand that doesn't even, a demand that would ensure, if you went through it that way, that the notes would never become public.
Right.
You would never know what was in the notes.
Right. They would not, because of the Senate rule, see the light of day. If you want this public, there's plenty of ways to do that.
866-90-RED-EYE. Let's go to Sherman in Indonesia. Sherman, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Listening online. Hi.
Thanks. Good afternoon from Indonesia. I'm a longtime listener, first-time caller. I don't care whether you're a Democrat or Republican. As you pointed out, it is the Judiciary Committee's job to investigate Kavanaugh and this whole situation. And Dianne Feinstein obstructed justice. I don't know why everybody's just not totally up in arms about this. Maybe eventually they will be. But to me, that's the real criminal in all of this. Because if Feinstein had released this information back in July, it would have been quietly handled and investigated thoroughly. It would have maintained the anonymity of Blasey Ford. It would have respected Kavanaugh's reputation. And they would have gotten to the bottom of this. And either Kavanaugh would have been bounced out of nomination, and Blasey Ford would have been proved to be right. Or not. But Dianne Feinstein obstructed justice here and pulled this last minute. And she should be, read out of town on a rail for obstructing justice. I mean, it's a criminal action.
Well, if you look at it, who betrayed the trust of Dr. Ford? It was Dianne Feinstein. It was the Democrats.
Right. They're the ones that leaked it to the media.
If we're taking Dr. Ford at her word.
Mm-hmm.
Then the only people that have betrayed Dr. Ford are the Democrats.
Right.
Exactly. And that's the biggest thing that's being missed. And it's what mentality of the ends justify the means is just over and over getting more and more brutal. And I just don't understand why every American wouldn't be up in arms over Dianne Feinstein. I really don't. I don't get it.
Yeah.
Yep. Thank you so much.
Sherman.
Appreciate your call, Sherman. And thanks for listening in Indonesia.
Yeah, he's in Bali. So, wow. We forget sometimes that we know we have listeners in Europe and West Africa.
This was our old show, actually. Yeah, it wasn't on Red Eye, but our show previous to this, we had a winner of a
contest
from the U.S. Embassy in West Africa.
Right? Like, what? That great? Someone called us from Rio, right? One night.
Oh, Brazil,
said, you know, that, look, our economy is tanking. Don't go down this road. Don't go down this, you know, socialize this and socialize that.
Israel, we had the guy from France, the truck driver from France that said, our trucks are different than yours.
no joke.
That one.
Right.
So, yeah, we love our international audience. And the really cool thing is, and we realized this one time, that there is very little live emanating from the United States news-wise.
Right, right.
Overnight.
Well, CNN stuff is for a lot of the overnight stuff is CNN international, so it's not really, you know, U.S. driven. So when
it's day over there and they want to know, okay, what's going on? It's like they've come to Red Eye, which is really, really, really cool. And when we realized that one day, we went, okay, we may be overnights in the States, but hey, we're on during the day all around the world.
Hey. And for all those outside of the U.S., this is prime time in the U.S. It's when all the idiots go to sleep and all the smart people listen to the radio.
That's true. The smart vampires are all up.
That's right.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio, 866-90-RED-EYE. I guess you can say sort of breaking news. Senator Steve Daines of Montana told Fox News exclusively on Thursday night that although he will walk his daughter down the aisle at her wedding Saturday, his plans will not affect Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation vote scheduled for the same day. Speaking to Shannon Bream, which means this had to be late last night.
Right.
And Fox News at night, Dane said he personally called Kavanaugh Thursday evening and told him, I'm going to be there to vote for you as needed. So isn't going to delay anything. It was funny because you said, well, you know, where's his daughter getting married in Montana? And I looked at you and said, I don't think he wants anybody to know.
He probably doesn't want anyone to know. And that really spells out how crazy this thing is and has become. The left believes going direct, especially after confronting Jeff Flake, that it's working. That they're, you know, that the tactic is not only working but acceptable. And we'll shame you out of a restaurant. We'll confront you on the elevator. We'll anywhere and everywhere, as directed or I guess further encouraged by Maxine Waters, anywhere and everywhere. Doesn't matter where you are, get in their face. Well, that becomes dangerous because it's impossible for somebody to be able to assess a threat. Just imagine in your everyday life, and you're not a lawmaker, unless we have lawmakers listening, which we often do, and we thank you for that, but you're not included here. You're just walking around a grocery store. Thank you, the Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, for listening, and also Senator Lindsey Graham for listening.
Yes,
as well.
Exactly.
Yes. And probably Rand Paul, although he's screaming no all the time. But we actually love Rand Paul. But if you're walking around, you know, in public, the average person, and someone just ran up to you and started screaming in your face, you wouldn't know what they're doing.
Yeah, you
wouldn't know.
Now, you don't know what the threat level is at that.
And certainly it's different when you're a Jeff Flake and you're confronted in the way he was, and you know why they're in your face, but you can't assess the threat level
in public. You can't.
You just cannot. No. You don't know what the person is capable of doing. If they're there to physically harm you, it's impossible to assess that. So, as such, security has been ramped up tremendously. The restaurant, in fact, that where Ted Cruz was shamed out of the restaurant. First of all, kudos to the restaurant saying, you know, because you can hear a person in the background on that video saying, look, you can't, you know, telling the protesters, look, you can't be in here. This is a private, you know, business. So
well, you saw the letter that that Rand Paul's wife wrote to CNN and challenged Cory Booker and everybody else saying, look, you people are you are enabling.
Yes.
These threats.
You have to own it now, and, because right, after Maxine Waters, especially,
right,
but
and,
yeah,
and you need to stop. And she directly went after Cory Booker.
Right. You know, that's the whole thing, is that it they have to take their responsibility in it. They have to be the ones to take at least change the tone. Mm-hmm. Are they going to do that? No, they're not.
It's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley. Welcome. Good morning. Thanks for being here. Well, all I got to say is you don't need a soap opera anymore. Here is news from the last hour. First off, a little background. Remember, the boyfriend of Dr. Ford, the ex-boyfriend of Dr. Ford, said that she had coached, a former FBI employee, Monica McLean?
Right.
That she had coached her to take a polygraph test. And then Monica McLean came out the other day and said, no, that never happened.
Right.
An update to that story, this here just from the last hour, I believe, from the Wall Street Journal. And the headline is, friend of Dr. Ford felt pressure to revisit statement at issue a statement to the committee that she knew nothing about the alleged sexual assault by Brett Kavanaugh. A friend of Christine Ford told FBI investigators that she felt pressured by Dr. Ford's allies to revisit her initial statement that she knew nothing about an alleged sexual assault by a teenager, Brett Kavanaugh, which she later updated to say she believed but couldn't corroborate Dr. Ford's account.
Mm-hmm.
According to people familiar with the matter, Leland Kaiser, who Dr. Ford has said was present at the gathering where she was allegedly assaulted in the 1980s, told investigators that Monica McLean, a retired Federal Bureau investigation agent and a friend of Dr. Ford's, had urged her to clarify her statement. Like I said, who needs a soap opera?
Right.
The other people said the statement to the FBI offers a glimpse into how Dr. Ford's allies and friends working behind the scenes to lobby old classmates to bolster their versions of the alleged incident, as were Judge Kavanaugh's. Judge Kavanaugh's, whose Supreme Court nomination will be debated in the Senate on Friday, has denied the allegation of sexual misconduct. So on Thursday, a day after sending to the White House to report on its investigation into the alleged allegations against Judge Kavanaugh, the FBI sent the White House and the Senate an additional package of information that included text messages from Ms. McLean to Ms. Kaiser, according to a person familiar with the matter. So apparently they've updated it. Ms. McLean's lawyer said in a statement, any notion or claim that Ms. McLean pressured Leland Kaiser to alter Ms. Kaiser's account of what she recalled concerning the alleged incident between Dr. Ford and Brett Kavanaugh is absolutely false. So the plot thickens.
Yeah, interesting.
That was Wall Street Journal, just had that here in the last hour.
Right.
So there's where we stand. And as we told you earlier, Senator Vaines from South Dakota will be there for the vote. He called Judge Kavanaugh and said, I will be there. His daughter is getting married on Saturday, but don't know the details of it. But he said on Fox News last night and that he had called Kavanaugh and said he will be voting. How, we don't know. We don't know about how and why. The other thing is just looking here at the Wall Street Journal from yesterday about what Jeff Flake said. Here's a quote they have. I'm still reviewing the information, but we've seen no additional information yet. No additional corroborating information, Mr. Flake said. Susan Collins praised the FBI for a complete, very thorough investigation.
So it comes down to those, we'll call them the final four, but those were the four in the meeting after the hearing a week ago yesterday, right? Hearings. So after the hearings, four of them, Jeff Flake, Susan Collins, Murkowski, and Manchin, went into a room and had a meeting. We don't know what was discussed, but it appears that it's really coming down to those now, because you have essentially Heitkamp has said she's a no. So essentially, right now, the only Democrat it looks like you might be able to count on is Joe Manchin. So if you've got every Republican on board, assuming that Jeff Flake is a yes, then that gets you to 52. If Jeff Flake is a no, you're still on the soft head count. You're still at 51.
With Manchin.
If for some reason Manchin pulls out, or Murkowski, or it doesn't appear that Collins will. If Collins had a concern, she would have issued that concern about the report, saying, I'm not sure we got everything. At the very least, she would have questioned something. Praising the report tells me you can count on that vote. So right now you're looking at, I mean, I think at the very least 50, with the vice president being the tiebreaker at 51. The word from, and there was another story in the Wall Street Journal that the GOP right now is really upbeat about the confirmation process. If you look at it, the talk right now is that they're confident. So you get through a cloture, which will happen sometime during the day on Friday. As you mentioned, Gary, the process will start mid-morning. But then the actual vote may not happen until later in the afternoon.
Right. By the time they get through the procedure, when would the actual vote take place? And then there would
the 30 hours.
The clock starts at that point.
Yeah. And they can take up to 30 hours. It may not take 30 hours. They could end the debate before 30 hours. But assuming they'll use the entire 30 hours, and they might, especially on a Saturday, the media might give them the news media, cable news, might give them, all the time in the world. So you look at the so-called hopefuls for 2020, your usual suspects, Warren and all of them, looking to get camera time, the debate might, go on the full 30. Just assume that it will. That's why you've got the rule. Assume that it will. So that puts it late into Saturday night, as you mentioned earlier, Gary, depending on where they land on the clock lands on the cloture vote, maybe into early Sunday morning. But that gives, the wiggle room, or the enough room for Senator Daines to get, home from the wedding, or back to work from the wedding, and his daughter's wedding. And we wish his daughter and her soon-to-be husband all the best. But he'll get back in time for the vote. So that tells us it's probably going to be a late Saturday night vote.
I think about all the I'm just sitting here just contemplating and thinking of all the protests, the violence, the civil disobedience when certain things, when Trump was elected, the Women's March, all of these things that go on. And if you look over the last 8 years and the number of protests, remember Occupy Wall Street, all that went on, all the the occupying of city properties and everything else that went on, what you're seeing now, and you have a party that constantly does that. You have another party that really doesn't do that at all.
Right.
You see now the getting into the faces of people, which can be quite intimidating. But here's the question. Is it effective for them?
Right.
Has it been effective? And you go all the way back, like I said, let's go back to the Obama administration. I mean, you can look at the Tea Party, but the Tea Party was completely and totally non-violent and no riots, no tear gas, mm-hmm. nothing like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you look at it and you get into the Occupy Wall Street.
Right, right.
Where you're actually trespassing and, you know, taking over and wanting to camp out. And, you know, there were riots in certain cities that happened when the police tried to push them off. But this is almost the exclusive domain of the left and therefore the Democrats.
Sure, yeah.
And you think about the run that they have had since all of this, you know, really, I'll look at Occupy Wall Street as just the beginning of this portion of it. Has it been effective for them when it comes to the vote? Do people actually respond to it, or do they believe that the intimidation tactics will actually work and change? For example, they're not, you know, you could see if they might be, you know, threatening the senators that are on, you know, on the edge right now.
Right.
Okay. On mm-hmm. the margins.
Right.
But they're not. They're going after everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care whether it's Grassley, doesn't care whether McConnell, whatever. Do they really think that that's effective? Or is it the fact that when you are just so full of rage, because that's what it is, it's just insane rage that they're filled with.
Right, yeah.
Just anger and rage. Is it just a desperation tactic, or do they actually believe that it is effective? I really wonder, and I was thinking to myself here before I started talking about this, I'd love to sit down and talk with them. Oh, that wouldn't be possible. So yeah. I'm never going to find out, because I'm never going to be able to sit down and say, you know, tell us what your strategy is.
Right, yeah. Well, I think after the flake thing, I think they feel empowered to some extent. They feel that it is effective to some extent. But I think it's probably I think it's a lot of both, actually. That they believe after confronting Manchin and after, you know, the behavior in restaurants and everything else and shaming people out of restaurants. I mean, think about that, Gary, that you're not protesters in a restaurant. You work there. It's your job. And you refuse, in one case, to do it because Sarah Huckabee Sanders is eating the food you're going to prepare and serve. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine being in that mentality?
No.
If I worked in a restaurant, I don't care what I was doing in that restaurant, and Barack Obama and his family came in, the last thing that I would do is refuse to do my job. Me not doing my job is not going to change his politics or change anything that I disagreed with that he did. And that's the mentality. But that's where they live. We go back to the one restaurant where you had a man, happened to be African American, wearing a Make America Great Again hat. And the staff was shaming him at his table to the point that his companion, I don't know if it was his girlfriend or his wife, was in tears. And they kept it up. They kept it up. They kept it up. I can't imagine. I cannot imagine. I wouldn't be able to face my friends and family if I did something so despicable. Just shameful. Just shameful. If you want to talk about getting a picket, going out on the steps of SCOTUS, as long as you're not trespassing or breaking the law, I encourage that. I don't care what you believe. I don't care what you're promoting or protesting for or against.
And I remember it was about, you know, we've talked about it before, it was probably about 7 years ago when, and you know the person that I'm talking about, mm-hmm. and it was really, you know, somebody who I considered a casual friend, you know, knew them more professionally. Mm-hmm. We were in a conversation, and it was a black man who was a huge fan of my show. Mm-hmm. Now, I sort of knew her politics were more of the liberal bent, but she went absolutely insane. We have been talking since that point, and she completely rejected me as a friend because in a conversation, a black man said he loved our show.
Right.
Think about that. Yeah. And that was really my first taste of that type of insanity.
Because that person you're referring to, as you described it before, went from zero to, you know, basically
right.
Small talk with you. Hey, good to see you. Thanks for stopping by, that kind of thing, to all of a sudden over-the-top rage.
Right. Within,
could not believe that somebody of color would be listening to and more so be a fan
be
of
a
the
fan.
Program.
Right. And you remember when it happened, and yeah. I was sort of laughing. I was like, it was so bizarre and so insane.
Yeah.
But maybe that was the early warning system for me, at least.
Right. On a personal level. Close and personal.
Right. Understanding that and that's exactly what we're facing, because the rage and bitterness, I believe, is probably still there today in this person.
Yeah.
Which to me is just, I can't imagine that kind of mindset.
I have friends that I still love dearly that listen to our show, and I've known them since grade school, and we still connect on a few times a week on Facebook. But we see each other on a regular basis and everything else. We love each other. We tease each other about the politics. And there is no way that either of us, none of us, would ever draw that line and say, well, you can't be my friend. I can't. There's no way. We can have the debate just like family. But you know, for the far left. Not for many
but
on
it was,
the far left.
But it wasn't even what I said. It was that a black man liked what we talked about.
And that person just was livid about that.
866-90-RED-EYE.
When it comes to proper tire care and maintenance, what can you do to improve fuel economy? Jason Evans is Director of Store Operations for GCR Tires and Service, and he tells us.
Fuel economy is certainly something on the top of everybody's mind. So I think the industry in general understands, beginning to understand the importance of things like air pressure. But just to throw an idea out there that maybe not all our listeners hear all the time, is check your tread depths. Check your tread depths, particularly on dual wheel positions where tires are bolted together and essentially forced to rotate down the road at the same speed, because for $2 in your local truck stop, you can find a tread depth gauge. Anything beyond 1/8 of an inch difference, or commonly referred to as 4/32 in the tire industry, between dual positions can really add to rolling resistance. Not only does it add to rolling resistance, it tears up your tires faster, and in a lot of cases, it's a similar condition in terms of a fuel economy as having maybe a brake dragging. That may be a tidbit out there for the listeners to really key in on, because mismatched tread depths on duals can really add to rolling resistance.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio, 866-90-RED-EYE. We'll get your calls and comments coming up on the bottom of the hour if you want to get in. The cloture vote is set for tomorrow. It'll start at 10:30. By the time they finish with the cloture vote, then the Senate will have 30 hours before, you know, maximum debate time before there will be an actual vote. The senator from South Dakota has said, even though the story came out yesterday late afternoon, that he might not be there because his daughter's getting wedding. He will be there.
So. Yeah, I think that was they jumped on that story, and it I saw it on the Hill late in the day. But I thought to myself, I'm sure they're going to make this work. While your daughter's wedding is certainly paramount, I'm certain there was no way that Danes was going to miss that. either of those events, the vote, if right now the Republican Party. And I really have to wonder about Flake. You know, if you look at Flake and his comments about the report, they seem to be, I guess, indicating that he still could be a yes vote. I'm assuming that's the case. Collins is as well. Manchin is on the fence. And the latest we saw, I think Manchin had, what, a 9-point lead in his state. Does he think, you know, he's in comfortable territory enough to the point that he can vote no? Remember, 9 points isn't a given. We still have about 4.5 weeks before the election, and it can turn quickly if he votes no, and he knows that.
They never follow the company code of conduct. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So it comes down to what it's come down to from day one when we started talking about this, and that is the fact that there was an allegation that couldn't be corroborated, and there was no absolutely no evidence except for the allegation that that Brett Kavanaugh ever did anything that was wrong. And
right.
It got to the point, I mean, even yesterday when it was, you know, six, seven of his friends basically came on to talk about, you know, what was in the yearbook. And I mean, it got to the point, I was reading to you, and let me see if I can find it here. I just thought about it right now.
Right.
The National Review article by Charles Cook. Charlie Cook, and it was just to the point of complete bizarreness. Here it is from Charles Cook, National Review. Perjury update. The Kavanaugh said he didn't drink to excess. Perjury claim was never remotely credible to anybody who can read English or who has watched Kavanaugh answer questions through the process. The text messages perjury claim has fallen apart.
Mm.
The boof perjury claim has fallen apart. The FFFFFF perjury claim has fallen apart, and the Devil's Triangle perjury claim has fallen apart. What a disaster our media is. There were actually people on the left going crazy about the Devil's Triangle perjury claim,
yeah,
and saying
right.
He committed perjury there. I mean, and they were, I mean, it got to the point of, have you actually looked it up? And have you looked up what it says in the Urban Dictionary?
Right.
Somebody makes the point, the Urban Dictionary didn't exist in 83.
Exactly.
It's like this is what we've gotten to. And you know what I enjoy the most? I enjoy when things get insane. Who was it? Kathy Griffin.
Yeah. Right.
The basically put F. You know, everybody, every Republican,
mm-hmm.
Brit Hume, and I'm paraphrasing him here, like, oh, that's, you know, that's a intelligent argument.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm amazed the number of people that he
responds
to.
There's the celebrity part of it. The celebrity part of it is you've got to jump into the fray and battle to be angrier than to be the angriest person in the room. They used to want to be the smartest person in the room. Now they just want to be the angriest person in the room.
Oh. Speaking of the smartest person in the world, just, I don't know, there's just a few other stories. We're going to get your calls and comments on this because a lot of people want to comment on the Brett Kavanaugh and the cloture vote tomorrow, and will there be a vote on Saturday, or, you know, what the vote count might possibly be. But when you just brought it up, the smartest person in the world, did you see where Robert Francis O'Rourke said,
mm-hmm.
Oh, we don't necessarily want Obama's
yeah.
endorsement. I'm thinking, you've got to be kidding me.
Well, there's a couple of things there because, you know, the O'Rourke campaign, as he broadens it out beyond the El Paso district where he serves, look, he's the king of El Paso, no doubt, politically. Outside of the cartels that are operating in with all due respect to the cartels. The whole idea, though, is that you've got to broaden it beyond the El Paso district, right? I mean, he can win the El Paso district as long as he wants to run for that House seat. And I have friends there that say, oh, man, he's got his hands in everything. That's different, though, when you broaden it out to the rest of Texas. Now, certainly he's done better than a lot of the people who jumped into different races. The former Dallas County Sheriff, Lupe Valdez, her running against the current governor, Greg Abbott. He's very comfortable in the lead. But when you broaden it out to the state level, you've got to go, you got to realize that you have to pretend you're in the middle.
Well, that's a bit O'Rourke is trying to do. He's trying to picture himself, and he's not in the middle on anything.
No.
But he realizes that he has to lie even to get Democrats. He can't be truthful even with Democrats in Texas and hope to get elected. And that's the realization. I mean, the Democrats used to be that way all the time. They used to, we need to move to the middle. And then over the last 10 years or so, no, they were, basically, this is who we are. I guess my point is that when you think about 10 years ago right now, when you think of 10 years ago,
mm-hmm.
when Obama was running for president, mm-hmm. and wasn't it right about now, right around this, wasn't it in October? Remember he held, it would have been the convention.
Where
was it the convention? When he was at the stadium, the football stadium in Denver, and they had it looked like he was entire stage that was set up with mm-hmm. these pillars mm-hmm. and everything else, where he looked
like some Greek forum.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And people going crazy. And remember, in his first term, Evan Thomas from Newsweek at the time, he's godlike. He's post-partisan. He's godlike. He hovers over the rest of us. He's the smartest person in the world. To now, 10 years later, one of the leading socialist candidates in the country.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want Obama.
Yeah, we don't need him.
I don't need Obama.
Yeah, we don't need him.
No, we don't need Obama.
Yeah. No, think about the Hollywood. And that's a great point, because here's the thing is that aesthetically, inside the state, it doesn't work. But O'Rourke has no problem taking money from outside the state, from the liberals, who have been pouring money into the state, into his coffers, in order to beat Ted Cruz, in an effort to beat Ted Cruz. He wants the liberals to, you guys stay outside of Texas. Look, we've got our liberal places in Texas. There are plenty of the districts that are blue, and counties that are blue, including the county we broadcast from.
Yeah, but here, the point is, though, mm-hmm. the point is not who he would have gotten in addition mm-hmm. if he would have got Obama.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is, he knew he could reject Obama publicly.
Yeah, but that's the point I'm getting to.
And his core doesn't care.
Yeah.
Obama means nothing to them anymore.
No. That's exactly what I'm getting to, is that it does nothing for them, and it only irritates someone who might be in the middle in Texas.
Right.
I mean, it only works against that middle, which might get you over the... It actually is the only thing that, in this case especially, that's going to get you over the top for the win. But he knows by essentially denouncing and saying, turning down the Obama endorsement, that it does not hurt his base.
Right. They don't care.
Right.
We don't.
Because
Obama's yesterday's news.
Well, listen, I mean, liar Lanny Davis, remember, he was going to be the hero. So he was the hero of the moment. The point is, and not that Lanny Davis is a Barack Obama, but the point is that there is a new hero for a different reason every day on the left. And by the way, that hero is going to be the demon tomorrow. That's the way it works, because you could be someone who is a fellow victim of whatever right now, but tomorrow you're going to be the oppressor. because the person standing next to you will have a new reason to be a victim and will need a new oppressor, and it's going to be you.
Here's my again, I could be wrong, but here's my gut that liberal Democrats, the ones that would vote for, you know, Beto O'Rourke here in the state of Texas,
right,
look at, I can't believe I'm going to use the word, they look at Obama and say he was a poser.
Right.
He really said he was going to do all this stuff, and he didn't do a damn thing.
Right.
He just sat up there, and he liked being president, but he really didn't believe and didn't push the leftist causes that we believed in, that he went from God-like to poser in 10 years.
Right.
Or by the beginning of his inauguration to the end of his term as president of the United States, that is how the modern-day liberal looks at him. They look at him and they just say, wow.
Okay,
don't need him anymore. He's not the... Think about this.
Yeah.
Obama is not a president like him, because you and I talked about this, that, you know, by the time we got to the midterms, that Obama would be the leader. I don't say I predicted it, but I thought there was a great chance that Obama, because there was nobody else, and Feinstein, you know, or Pelosi's getting old, and, you know, Schumer is too New York, and so it would still be Obama that would be the leader for a while of the Democrat Party. He's nothing anymore.
Now, going back to the tragic night here in Dallas in July of 2016, when five police officers were killed by Micah Johnson, in the hours that led up to that horrific night, it was just a couple of hours before it started. I was online. I follow the local media on Facebook, and one of the local TV stations was live Facebooking the protesters, because it was a protest march and was peaceful up until that point, of course. But they were talking, the leaders of the protest associated with, there were a couple of different groups that were represented there, including Black Lives Matter, but the leaders of the protest, the ones who were speaking. This was about 6:45 p.m., and that was the reason that the television station was live Facebooking this, because their broadcast, the 6 p.m. broadcast, news broadcast, was over. So they went to live Facebook. So I'm watching it. The thing I remember the most is them saying, what has Obama done for us? Remember, this was before the 2016, months before the 2016 election, July of 2016. What has Hillary done for us? Nothing. What did Obama do for us? Nothing. And I thought to myself, you know, there, because that was one of those cracks in the foundation, if you will, of the left, although it had started happening before that. For me, it was telling. Because you had young activists, and the two that were speaking were African American. What has Obama done for us? What has Hillary done for us? The left, or the Democratic Party, thinking they're going to get the win, you don't get the win just because they may agree with you at the moment. The protesters are carrying the party. The party doesn't have direction because there's no one single cause.
No,
it's multi-directional.
No, right, right.
And it always will be. That's why the party has no direction.
Well, that's
right,
a great
now
point. That's what you get with identity politics, because there is no...
There's no one identity.
There is no general issue or goal or a group of goals that they actually want, because when you split everybody, when you continue to expand your pie of victims and therefore expand your pie of oppressors, you end up never being able to, as a party, having a particular political goal. This is probably the closest that you'll get to a political goal, which is to defeat Kavanaugh.
Yes, if the activists are going in multiple directions, then the party is led by them. They're trying to go in every direction, and they have no direction at all.
Except for abortion.
Right.
Nothing right now unites the Democrats.
Right.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Coming up following the top of the hour, some audio you have to hear from Tucker Carlson last night on Fox News. You know that the ACLU put out that ad where they put Brett Kavanaugh side-by-side with Bill Cosby.
Mm.
And they brought on the representative from the ACLU who attempted to defend that. Great.
Yeah, right.
By the way, great learning moment. Nobody can ever defend the American Civil Liberties Union anymore.
No.
And even call them the American Civil Liberties Union anymore.
No.
Because they don't even give a pretense that they believe in civil liberties or the presumption of innocence. Everything that they stood for is out the window. They're just another leftist hack group is all they are.
Right. They basically co-opted the whole idea of civil liberties. They need this to be a civil rights movement. That's what they needed. They needed the ACLU. The liberals actually need any given issue today to be just like the civil rights movement, whether it's transgenders or whatever it might be. We're going to say this is the exact same as the civil rights movement.
Right, but actually, liberalism and civil rights is dead. What you saw in the 60s, that type of liberalism and the belief in civil liberties is gone.
It's gone, long gone.
Of individual rights, of individual civil liberties is gone.
No, it is completely one side, and you jump on that side, believe the accuser, believe the, as they were chanting, the survivor. Really? You guys weren't saying that when it was someone accusing a Democrat?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. It's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Yesterday about this time, Eric, I was saying that I wanted to end the show and go home so we could go to sleep and wake up. This was yesterday morning. Because I thought it was going to be insanity all day, and it was actually, you know, as to what the Democrats would try to come up with. And it was really a quiet day, but then this one came out late last night. This attempt to stop the vote. You ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
Senator Jeff Merkley asked a court Thursday afternoon, a federal court, to quickly step in and delay the Senate from voting on this weekend on Brett Kavanaugh's nomination to the Supreme Court. Mr. Merkley has filed a long-shot lawsuit arguing President Trump has violated the Constitution by withholding documents from Judge Kavanaugh's past, denying senators the ability to make an informed decision on the nomination that he says violates the Constitution's demand that the Senate give advice and consent on the nominations.
Mm-hmm.
The Oregon Democrat asked for a hearing on Friday afternoon or Saturday morning, just before the Senate is expected to hold a final vote on the judge's evaluation. Once the vote is taken, plaintiffs' ability to comply with the Constitution's advice and consent process will be permanently extinguished, the senator's lawyer wrote to Judge A.B. Berman Jackson, an Obama appointee to the Federal District Court in Washington. Judge Jackson on Wednesday scheduled a hearing for next Tuesday after all sides had a chance to submit briefs. But he filed it Thursday. How could she file? That doesn't make any sense to me in the stories. Mr. Merkley says the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell moved to schedule votes on Judge Kavanaugh, have upset that previous timeline. He asked Judge Jackson to ensure a temporary restraining order prohibiting the Senate from taking a final vote. The Justice Department, in a reply Thursday, said Mr. Merkley already has an avenue to object to the process. He can attempt to filibuster. And should that fail, he can vote against the nomination. Plaintiff's dispute is primarily with his fellow senators, the government lawyers said in their brief. While a judge's order could be difficult to enforce on senators, it would be impossible A court can't stop a vote.
No. No, they can't stop the process.
And so I see what he's doing here. He said, I knowing that asking the court to intervene to protect the separation of powers and the integrity of the confirmation process is an unusual request. I have made this request because we have never seen such an extraordinary use of executive privilege to block the Senate's ability to review the relevant record of the nominee. So what they're saying is, he's trying to make the point that Trump is perverting the process.
Right.
That the executive branch is perverting the process here when, and the government lawyers are saying, no. Because the Senate, you know, it's not the executive branch scheduling the vote. It's the Senate scheduling the vote.
Right.
It's up to the majority in the Senate to decide whether they are satisfied with what the executive branch has done, giving them information from the FBI, whatever.
Well, and they can't, the judicial branch cannot stop the legislative branch
from a vote,
from a process.
No.
The effect of any process, let's say it's a legislative process and there's a new law, then they can come in and say, we can block that law from going into effect. They can, the work that's already done, but not the process. So the effect of the process, but they can't stop in and say, you have to, any more than they can say, this judge can't have a hearing. The Senate can't say, well, this judge can't have a hearing. The executive branch, this judge can't have a hearing. No.
Well,
they get the process. And then after the process, the result of that process is what you're going to challenge in court. There is no standing here.
Well, there's no standing because the Senate is moving ahead by the will of the Senate because the majority rules in the Senate. And what he's saying is, no, the president isn't giving us all the information. Well, no, the majority in the Senate, which calls the shots, believe that the executive branch has fulfilled all of their requests. They have stated that publicly. That's why there's going to be a vote. There is no fight, and there is nothing that the executive branch is doing to hinder what the legislative branch is doing. Everything going on in the legislative branch, which is the Senate, is being controlled by the majority in the Senate, which is how the Constitution has dictated it.
Right.
I mean, this is so simple.
Because the
president
does not set the vote or the timeline of the vote.
No.
He does not set the Senate Majority Leader's schedule for when McConnell on Wednesday gave notice for cloture. That the president doesn't have anything to do with
What's a federal judge going to do? Do an injunction and they go, yeah, right. And then they go ahead with the vote.
What, right.
She's going to take McConnell and put him in contempt of court?
Yeah.
And have somebody come and arrest McConnell?
Yeah, because from what I understand in this story, Merkley had gone to the courts before this. And what he was trying to do is get this. That's why they scheduled the hearing on Wednesday. But that was, I think, a move where they filed either last week or earlier this week. And then when it looked inevitable, and it did, of course, it was inevitable as of Wednesday afternoon, that there was going to be a vote this weekend, that's when Merkley said, well, no, because we haven't had, you know, our day in court with the Trump administration. The Trump administration, the executive branch does not set when the Senate is going to vote.
This is really weak. I mean, this is the Hail Mary. I mean,
but here's the thing. You're not going to want to miss work tomorrow. let me put it this way. It's Friday. You might want to miss a little sleep during the day, or at least when you get up, turn every device that you own on and make sure it's connected, because it's only going to ramp up between now and the final vote on Saturday or early Sunday, whenever it happens. This is because you're right. A couple of things here. Again, the legislative branch doesn't have the power to stop. The judicial branch doesn't have the power to stop the legislative branch process.
Right.
They don't get to say, you know, what their schedule is. Now, if they go through and, again, enact a law, sign a law, a bill into the president signs it into law, they can come in and then challenge the effect of the process. But then outside of that, as you point out, Gary, it's two separate branches that are working here. Your suit, your lawsuit should be against the Senate. It's not. It's against the executive branch, who has no say-so over the timeline of the vote on the Senate floor.
Well, he knows there's no chance that he could go to the court and say, let's stop the process because I disagree with the majority.
Right.
Because that's not going to go anywhere. So what he's trying to make is that there's a debate going on between the executive branch and the Senate, because the executive branch is interfering with the Senate. Well, you can't make that point because the Senate, which is the leadership of the Senate, which is the Republicans, have said, we've got everything we want from the executive branch and the FBI. We're moving forward. Mm-hmm. And he's trying to say that the executive branch is holding things up and not giving them the information. Well, you don't get to make that call as a minority member. You don't get to go to the courts to try to override the majority in the Senate.
You know what this is like? What this is like? It's like I decided to get in the ring with an Evander Holyfield, right? And realized quickly that I'm greatly overpowered, so I call in Mike Tyson to do my fight for me. I mean, this is like, because it's basically, you have a Democrat who's not getting his way, and his only claim is that they're not getting documents, the Senate's not getting the documents. The Judiciary Committee chairman is the one who rules that part of it in any vetting process, and you know that. This is the process, but since you're not getting your way, you're trying to call mommy and daddy in to stop mean old Trump or the mean old Republicans because you disagree with it. It's not going to change your vote. It's going to delay the process, but it won't even do that.
No, because it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But the first thought I had was anybody who understands the separation of power. Wait a minute.
That's very few people.
Oh, very few people understand the separation of powers.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Yeah.
If you want to get in, we do have a line open. We'd love to hear from you. The cloture vote scheduled sometime after 10:30. Then 30 hours of debate and the vote sometime Saturday night, maybe early Sunday morning. So there's where we are right now. If you'd like to get in, lines open, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls, 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Front on radio, he's Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. So interesting, just on Twitter is just hilarious. I mean, it's just been the best. I mean, it's and the thing is, you have to as you know, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. You have to go on social media like Twitter, and you have to understand it. If you understand it and you don't let it get you, it's extremely entertaining. I was just telling you that I'm in enjoying going through Twitter and seeing all the different pictures of Amy Schumer and Michael Moore together, and Michael Moore defending, Amy Schumer for getting arrested. He's proud of her and all this. And I'm thinking, this is what your party is down to. Michael Moore and Amy Schumer.
Yep. You know, you would think we would see bigger names associated with this, right? Am I wrong on that? I mean, we talked earlier about, Alyssa Milano, and she has relevance in terms of, you know, her claim that she was abused at one point, and there was an assault against her. But the pop culture relevance, I don't understand with her, because, again, just a question, is she still relevant in pop culture? Well, you would think we would see bigger names on this, right? I mean the big Hollywood names. The A-listers. You would think that, they would be out in full force on something so important to the left, right? But we're not seeing a number of them. I just find that interesting.
The Senate Judiciary Committee released an executive summary late last night of the FBI supplemental background report into Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. According to the summary released by the Republican Committee majority, FBI agents interviewed 10 people and reached out to 11, focusing only on witnesses with potential firsthand knowledge of alleged sexual misconduct by Kavanaugh. Mm. The FBI provided to the Senate 12 detailed 302 reports summarizing their interviews with the witnesses, as well as supporting materials cited by the witnesses during their interviews. Among those questioned were Mark Judge, P.J. Smith, Leland Kaiser, the three individuals Christine Ford claimed were present when Kavanaugh allegedly threw her on the bed and sexually assaulted her sometime in the 1980s. All three of those individuals had already provided statements to the Judiciary Committee under penalty of a felony, denying any knowledge of the alleged assault. Kaiser, Ford's lifelong best friend, denied ever knowing Kavanaugh. When questioned about Kaiser's statement at last Thursday's hearing, Ford suggested Kaiser was having serious medical issues and had apologized for her denial. Judge was also questioned extensively about other allegations besides Ford. The FBI also interviewed two individuals named in Kavanaugh's calendar entry, which some observers said could have described the gathering where she was purportedly attacked. Those individuals were his longtime friend Christopher Garrett and Timothy Gaudette, whose house Kavanaugh went to for beers. According to his calendar, an attorney for one of those witnesses was also interviewed. Finally, the FBI interviewed Deborah Ramirez, the woman who claimed in an explosive New Yorker piece that Kavanaugh had exposed himself to her at a Yale party. The FBI also interviewed two alleged eyewitnesses identified by Ramirez and tried to interview a third, but that individual refused to cooperate. Agents also interviewed one of Ramirez's close friends from college. The supplemental background check investigation confirms what the Senate Judiciary Committee concluded after its investigation. There is no corroboration of the allegations made by Dr. Ford or Ms. Ramirez, the Judiciary Committee Republicans wrote.
There you have it.
So, and they went after people like, remember Ramirez said, well, I had 40 different people for them to talk to, or 20, whatever it was.
Right.
And the FBI said, nope, only people that you claim were there. Firsthand knowledge. Hearsay doesn't count.
Right.
So tell us, you know, tell us who was there, who you claim was there. We'll interview those people that had first-hand, you claim have first-hand knowledge. We're going with your claims. You tell us.
Right.
And they did. No cooperation.
Right.
For either Ramirez or Ford. So
right.
Interesting to know that that is what has come out in the summary.
Well, what's interesting here is that it was likely going to happen anyway, but you mentioned this, I believe it was yesterday on the program, and we were wondering in this process, because the rule, the Senate rule, that keeps the details in those 302 reports secret and can be viewed only by 100 people, there is going to be a summary overall to tell us essentially yay or nay if there is something new there or something more to this investigation. In other words, something to substantiate the claims by Dr. Ford and Ramirez. And that summary, if you look at it by the Judiciary Committee, is basically, I think in part, works to the effect of, as you mentioned yesterday, would they be trying to get some of this information out so the Democrats don't have the claim that this wasn't a thorough background check? Well, the fact of the matter is, you're only going to interview people with firsthand knowledge or people that were said to have had firsthand knowledge. Anyone else isn't going to be included in that process. The point being, the left is screaming all day long on Thursday, which was predictable, and we said it was going to happen. This is something that, you know, that this is a cover-up. That's the words they were using. It's a cover-up. No, it's not. Because Dr. Who's right now? Tell me. Who in this scenario, because if it's true, is hiding it from the Washington Post? You say it's a cover-up.
Who's hiding evidence?
Who's hiding evidence that they couldn't call the New York Times and the New York Times would put it on front page tomorrow? Tell me who is being covered up.
Dr. Ford's lawyers, Dr. Ford and her lawyers are holding
right.
up evidence
right.
that they claim corroborate her story.
Right. And it's not in the media already? For Video Road Log, here's your forecast.
The desert southwest back under dry conditions after what was Hurricane Rosa has moved northward. We'll see stretches of I-10 mainly clear today with the exception of far western Texas. There is a moderate risk of excessive rainfall, however, from eastern Iowa into far northwestern Illinois and southwestern Wisconsin, with a larger risk area extending back into the central plains. So you can look to use the wipers for a good portion of the day today on sections of I-80 in Illinois and Iowa, and from I-35 eastward over to I-75 in the Upper Great Lakes region and central Midwest area. We're going to see snow north of a line from mainly I-90 in North Dakota. I-94 certainly under the threat of some snow showers. Check ahead for local conditions on I-94. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Show.
It's Red Eye Radio. 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm telling you, I mean, Twitter is just a blast tonight. I mean, it's just a blast reading some of these. Cheryl Akison, formerly of CBS, investigative reporter, does very good work, writes... Actress Alyssa Milano says, quote, young people have had it difficult for generations and generations and generations, end of quote. And Cheryl writes, it's not as if anyone stays young forever, so she's basically saying that today's youngsters are being victimized by previous victims who are now older.
Well, yeah, right? Well, the thing is, it's impossible for young people, any young person, to have had it hard for generations and generations and generations, because eventually they're no longer a young person.
Oh, my head hurts.
Well, by the way, tell me a young person who's not full of complaint. I know a few, but they're losers. It's. That's what they always say. By the way, how old is Alyssa Milano?
She's got to be 40, right?
I'm guessing. Who's the Boss was on during the 80s, right? And she was a teen then.
Yeah, I think she's in
mid-40s, maybe?
Maybe 42, I'm guessing.
Okay.
I think I did look. Let me just look it up.
Yeah. I'm not sure who she was referring to. I'm just asking if she was trying to put herself in that category. Just a question.
Okay, I can't get to it. Yes, I did. Here we go. Born in 72, 45. Wow. Hey, okay. We're all getting old.
And she's just like 7 years younger than me.
See, I
thought she was. Okay. Well, I mean. We just added it up, but then it hit me. Yeah.
Well, you know how crazy it's getting. I'm going to play this because I promised it earlier, and we got off in another tangent after the news of the Republicans releasing the summary of the 302s and what who the FBI investigated. And it all makes sense. Because, you know, as they said, Ramirez wanted him to interview 20 or 30 or 40 different people. Well, the FBI said, who has direct knowledge of this happening? Not hearsay. Not mm-hmm. somebody who will say, well, yeah, I heard her talk about a sexual assault. Who was there? Tell us who was there.
Right.
What are your witnesses to this? That's who we'll interview. Hearsay doesn't matter here. We're here to do an investigation. You know, hearsay doesn't matter. Who are the people that had direct knowledge? Now, she could have given 20 people and said they all have direct knowledge. She gave them four. Mm-hmm. Ramirez did.
Mm-hmm.
Three were willing to talk to him, all apparently denied any knowledge of knowing anything about it, and a fourth one refused to talk to the FBI. Mm-hmm. That was on Ramirez. On Ford, we told you that they interviewed everybody that she had stated.
Mm-hmm.
She has stated nobody knew, and so they re-interviewed all the people again just to make sure, and a few new people. No direct corroboration of anything happening.
Right, right.
So there's where we are. But I want to play this here from Tucker Carlson on with Fayez Shakir, the American Civil Liberties Union National Political Director.
Okay.
They put out an ad where they had Kavanaugh side by side with Bill Cosby.
Yeah.
It's a terrible, slanderous ad. And let's put it this way. If the ACLU ran that against a private citizen, they'd be sued for millions of dollars.
Yeah.
There is no even... They're not even trying to hide anymore that they're not about civil liberties, that they
right.
don't believe in the presumption of innocence.
Right.
I just want to play part of the interview that went back and forth because it gets to the point of being insane. Remember, the American Civil Liberties Union, why were they created? To defend people's individual rights, to protect people that have been wrongly accused, not just wrongly convicted, wrongly accused. That the presumption of innocence is always the number one thing. That evidence is what determines whether you're guilty. They existed or used to exist to protect people's civil liberties, their civil rights. Here's part of the back and forth.
This is a disgusting ad, obviously. But what's so distressing is that you ran it. Because this is guilt by association, the very thing the ACLU nobly stood against during, for instance, the blacklist period. Bill Cosby and Brett Kavanaugh have nothing in common, and yet you twin them in order to discredit Kavanaugh. How could you do that as the ACLU?
So appreciate your comments, Tucker. The common thread here, of course, is powerful men whose careers were on the line issuing denials about sexual wrongdoing. And in this instance, we believe that the denial issued by Brett Kavanaugh goes right to integrity, a position that he's applying for on the Supreme Court, in which he sits in judgment of the rest of the nation. Integrity is of the critical importance, the utmost importance.
Okay,
and
but,
we have doubt
but,
about
but
his
on.
Integrity.
I agree, and I would never argue against the importance of integrity.
Okay.
But Bill Cosby has been convicted of crimes in court. He went through the legal process, the one that the ACLU, before it was taken over by partisans like you, once defended. Brett Kavanaugh has not been. So putting them together is, by definition, guilt by association and unfair. Do you think that the person in your position 20 years ago would have seen that?
Tucker, this isn't a civil or criminal trial. I think you understand that. We're talking about a job promotion assessment.
No, that's
and
the point I'm making.
The standard of proof here is not a beyond a reasonable doubt
so
assessment.
So then why did you put him next to Bill Cosby, who has been tried and convicted?
He is not entitled to the presumption of innocence. If you assume that, you're saying he's entitled to the job on the Supreme Court.
I'm not arguing that. I'm asking you why you put him next to a man who was tried in court and convicted of felonies and sentenced to prison.
Because that
when
individual
he, as
denied
you just noted, hasn't done any of those things.
That individual also denied the accusations. I think you would appreciate, Tucker, that we're criticizing people on the left and the
I
right.
I don't care
here.
About the left and the right. I care about
okay.
the principles that make the country worth
Same
living
here.
In, which you once defended and now you urinate on. Why not put him next to Charles Manson?
Sexual assault is to be taken very seriously here, Tucker, and I think that we're often crowding out the voices of women and believing the men and not believing women. In this case, this woman came forward
but
under extreme difficult circumstances
you're
and we should be believed.
Hold on. You're
There's
the ACLU.
Testimony.
Hold on. You're the ACLU. You don't believe in collective judgment or collective punishment.
No,
you
no,
believe
in
the rights of... Let me just remind you what you believe, because I think I know more about your organization
no,
than you do. I just
want to check
a book on
determination.
The ACLU. Okay. It's an individualized determination about this woman who can't afford an offer credible.
Exactly. Thank you. Now you're back in reasonable mode. So why would you say it's about women being heard when, of course, it's not? It's about one woman making one allegation against one man. It's not about all
women. In those instances, there have been other men who've denied accusations before them that we've said. And all we're saying is that in this instance, like in previous instances, women deserve an opportunity to be heard.
But it's not about... Hold on. So you're endorsing... collective judgment and collective
judgment.
Yes, you are. What,
no,
other women have nothing to do with it?
Sir, the judgment made against Kavanaugh is on the merits of the issues against Kavanaugh. He has not been honest and forthright. Chucker, I believe this, that had he come forward and said, listen, all of us were young at some point in life. We did something
Now you're just getting into fantasies. Let me ask you something that I've wanted to ask you for a long time. The ACLU is the reason that the First Amendment was defined in the Clarence Brandenburg versus Ohio case of 1967. He was a Klansman, and you guys defended his right to speak, and that's why I have the right to say what I think is true. The ACLU has now decided they're not going to defend anybody they disagree with.
No, sir. I think we are defending right now.
Do you want me to read the quote to you?
We're defending Milo. We're defending.
No,
you remember the Charlottesville case.
Do you want me to read the quote?
Name another group out there.
I'll tell you. We can refuse cases defending
with people on different ideological spectrums than the ACLU.
This is your new standard.
Tell me another group that more than the ACLU.
You're trying to shut me down because you know.
I'm trying to defend my principles here.
No. Let me read the memo from your group. We're not going to assist in cases that may advance the goals of white supremacists or others whose views are contrary to our values. If you're not defending people who are unpopular, who you disagree with, why do you still exist?
We absolutely defend the people. We are doing so right
you're
now. If you look at the...
You should be
if you
ashamed.
Look at a case in New York where we're defending the NRA, we look at a case where we're defending Milo.
Yeah.
I mean,
how about...
So it was done. Mm-hmm. It was done at that point. Mm-hmm. It was just...
Right. Well, because they do draw the line, and they are a political organization.
Yeah,
they're leftist political organization.
They're no longer and he read. Remember when they said they're going to change?
Right,
that they're not going to defend people that don't share their same values.
Right.
Well, then you've blown it completely. We're not going to defend their rights over there to free speech. But again, as we have said all along, on this issue, there have been so many offshoot arguments that have nothing to do with how Tucker Carlson right there was trying to bring it down to, no, wait a minute. We judge this case in our system. We judge this issue by the merits of this issue. As we said earlier, because somebody else has been sexually assaulted does not give them their opinion any more credibility on this particular issue. The only thing that matters is the evidence to back up her allegation. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter that other women have been criminally sexually abused, just like if somebody was making the allegation that they were robbed. Somebody else who was robbed does not have a greater morality or greater credibility to judge that particular issue. It's judged on the evidence that exists. And that alone.
Right.
That's the only thing that you can go by in this system. And the ACLU is now saying to hell with that.
Right.
Because no other case counts. No other criminal case counts. No other victims' opinions carry more credibility just because they're victims. It is the evidence in every particular case that counts.
Otherwise, anyone can make the claim. And if you're saying we believe the survivors and you behave like the ACLU or any organization or protester right now that is chanting the same thing, then wait for it. Because at some point, one of you will be falsely accused.
Well, you know, when they say believe the survivor at that particular point,
mm-hmm.
just alone, believe the survivor, which means believe the person making the allegation.
Right.
Well, actually, believe the survivor actually means believe the person making the allegation.
Yes.
If they are in favor of the political issue,
yes.
the actual background political issue that we're really dealing with here.
As long as it's someone on our side that's making the accusation.
Yes. We all know that's what it. We all know that's what it really means.
Yes.
But to say believe the survivor means you believe the person making the allegation, irrespective of any other evidence that exists.
Right.
Because you can't say believe the survivor and end it at that.
No, you can't.
You can't. That's un-American to say that. That's un-American. That's not believing in the Constitution. It's not believing in individual rights. It's everything that the ACLU used to stand for that now they reject completely. And Tucker Carlson, you know, later on said he lost his temper when he called them hacks. Well, you didn't. They are hacks.
They are.
They're trying to they're hacks because they're trying to portray themselves as people that care about civil liberties when obviously they don't. It's all about politics to them. Look, you and I have our day-to-day politics that we promote on the air, but we also promote individual rights, irrespective of our opinion on the issues of the day.
Yep.
Individual rights and the Constitution is still number one to us.
Yes,
it's
always.
Not to the ACLU. 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara. Coming up following the top of the hour, more of your calls and comments. We'll go through the scenario tomorrow, what to expect tomorrow, the cloture vote sometime after 10:30, then 30 hours of debate. Expect that the final vote for Kavanaugh will be sometime Saturday night, maybe, who knows, even into Sunday morning. So we'll get to that. We'll get to you also the Republicans releasing late last night the summary of the FBI report and how many people they interviewed and why they interviewed those particular people. And also the senator from South Dakota will be making it for the vote. So really those are some of the things that have happened over the last 6-7 hours or so being reported. We'll also tell you about the Facebook executive who got in trouble, and Facebook employees were reportedly outraged at one of their executives appearing at the Kavanaugh hearing. Apparently a friend, the guy who's the head of global policy at Facebook.
Right.
And so not happy at all that he was there. And he said, was an old friend, stick by an old friend in time of needs.
Right.
In time of need. It was that simple.
Right.
Even though they claimed he did apologize. For what?
For what?
I apologize, but I did the right
thing. What?
I don't know. It's what we do these days.
Right.
I apologize, but I would still do it. Well, then why do you got to apologize? You do what you think. I'm going to do what I think is right. If somebody else is offended by it, I'm not going to apologize for that.
Right.
I apologize for your feelings.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.